Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Fan Experience. We are on episode 14. Thank you for all of you returning viewers, and thank you for you first timers. For the first timers, this is a podcast for sports fans by sports fans. You know, everybody has a story. You don't have to be an athlete to have, you know, a great story revolving around sports. You know, it's all about the, you know, the world's greatest unifier, which is sports, and building together on a community and learning how much you have in common with your fellow sports fans. You know, and speaking of community, you know, the producers of this is Playing the Field. Playing the Field is a sports fan community. They allow you to connect with other sports fans for a variety of reasons, whether it's just to find a friend to talk about sports with, find a friend to go to games with, go halves on season tickets with, whether it's to, you want to start up a recreational softball league and you need 10 people to sign up. Well, there's a lot of people that are going to be out there looking for teams to play for. And then you can also find a romantic partner or find your MVP, as we like to say. So the sports fan community is strong. You know, the fans make up a lot of what makes sports sports. You know, we're the fans are the ones that practically, you know, pay the salaries of these athletes, you know, and it just brings cities together. It brings teams together. But it's not just about the fans. Sometimes there are these athletes that just, you know, embody, you know, the spirit of that team, spirit of that city. And unfortunately, we lost a legend over the weekend. We found out yesterday that the franchise, Tom Terrific, Mr. Tom Seaver, passed away due to he left the public eye last year because of dementia, and he had also some complications due to COVID over the weekend, and sadly, he has passed away. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the Seaver family, you know, the Mets family, everybody that, you know, Tom's life touched. You know, you just hear and looking at all the tributes going on for the, you know, for the past 24 hours now, you know, it's just, he was an amazing ball player. You know, nobody can take that away from him, but he was even, you know, more of an amazing person. You know, I'm going to just pass it on to Rick and let's hear some of his thoughts.
Well, good evening, everybody. Again, thank you for joining the podcast tonight. You know, when you think of Tom Seaver, you know, what's the first thing you think of? Tom Terrific, 69 Mets, him leading the charge when they were down, 10 games, I think, in that season. And they came back and made the charge. And he was just such an icon in New York. I mean, the way people revere Tom Seaver in New York City is incredible. And you know, the loss is just devastating. It rocked the sports world. I mean, I saw it yesterday when it came up on my phone, the Bleacher Report. I mean, you're shocked. You know, when you think of Tom Seaver, like, I was born in 77, but when you think of Tom Seaver, obviously you think of that 69 season, larger than life figure. You remember the dirt on his knee, as the Mets players today put the dirt on their knees, and him pitching with that tremendous power that he pitched with, and he just lit up the city. And obviously he played for four teams after that. But just a big loss for the baseball community and the Mets as a whole, you know. And, you know, I know next year I think they're putting the Tom Seaver statue out there in front of Citi Field. It's long overdue. But, again, just a tremendous loss. You know, he was suffering from dementia, obviously, and then he got COVID-19, which, you know, it's added on top of that. It's tragic. So, again, our thoughts and prayers go to Tom and his family. But, you know, just looking back on it, I mean, the era that Tom Seaver played in, if you think about it, like, right, the 69 Mets – the 69 Jets, you had Namath, you know, you had the Knicks with, you know, Clyde Frazier out there. And you know, little, you know, as time goes along, all these great icons, little by little, you know, time keeps going on. And, you know, it's sad, you know, sad to say that he passed on, but he left such a legacy. I mean, clear Hall of Famer. But just, you know, when I think of Tom Seaver, I just think of just an iconic figure, a larger than life figure. And yet the guy was like a really humble guy. He was just a quiet kid. You know, when he retired, he went out to, you know, you remember Tom Seaver, he used to be like announce the games, and he would have such a passion when he would announce the
broadcast
games.
Booth. Yep.
Yeah, he was in the broadcast booth, and then you know he went out to Napa Valley and started his winery, and he loved being out there in Napa doing the wine thing. So, again, for his family, sad loss, but we'll always have those memories. And again, for those of you who were young during that era in the late 60s, and that you know when he came up, and he, you know that boy that came up, Tom Terrific. You know, great lasting memories. So again, a big loss for the sports community and the sports world in general.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the Mets lost a legend, the baseball lost a legend, and, you know, some of the numbers that he put up, you know, they just,
yeah, I mean, 311
again.
Yeah, he won 311 games. I mean,
371 complete games. That's never going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the guy,
day and age, obviously we know that, but it's just, you know, it's crazy that the numbers that he put up, and you know, obviously without him, you know, and this and the 69 Mets, you know, not winning,
never happened.
You know, this, he is the Mets. I mean, you have to say, like, he is, he really is the definition and the franchise, and that's why he got that nickname. You know, over the past weekend, we also lost, somebody else, Chadwick Boseman passed away. We forgot, we did not mention it on Tuesday, and we apologize. You know, he is an honorable mention because, you know, obviously, he's been in a lot of big movies. Most notably, he played Jackie Robinson, in 42, and you know, he passed away on Jackie Robinson Day, last week as well. But he was suffering from colon cancer, stage 4, for the last 4 years. And he was taping movies such as The Black Panther and The Avengers, you know, during this whole time. So, you know, he was definitely strong, and he fought through it as much as possible. But our thoughts and prayers go out to him, you know, because, you know, COVID is bad. But, you know, obviously we know what cancer can do. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the Boseman family. You have a few words, Rick?
Yeah, that's also, it's a tragic loss. You know, you think about Chadwick, obviously playing Jackie Robinson, you know, bringing his life to the big screen and just really showing, you know, kind of what Jackie had to go through that time. And he was so great at it. And then obviously you talked about Black Panther. I mean, he was revered by that. You know, they were showing some of the clips of him at the NBA All-Star game, Victor Oladipo putting the mask on when he was in the dunk contest. And all the players, you know, I think during the national anthem, they did the Black Panther sign. So that's just a tremendous loss. And as such a young guy too. I mean, he was early 40s. I mean, you know, it's just so heartbreaking, man. You know, the world the way it is today, to lose, you know, Tom Seaver, Chadwick. I mean, it's just, you know, it just puts things in perspective sometimes that you got to just enjoy the moments in life and, you know, enjoy your family and your friends and whatever it is that brings you joy and happiness. But it's just such a tragic loss, man. It really is. And, you know, I thoughts and prayers out to his family. But he left such a lasting legacy on people. I mean, I've been watching these, I saw a picture of a young man doing a little kid doing the Black Panther sign. I think he had some like, figures of it. So it's again, heartbreaking. Yeah. And we just hope that, you know, his family does well moving forward, and we remember his legacy as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we really don't want to, you know, start the show on a somber note. But,
yeah,
you know, unfortunately, we lost two great people, you know, and, you know.
We got to pay our respects to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to get off of the COVID and you know, the disease front, you know. Brief mention that The Rock and his family contracted COVID, but they have recovered. They are still recovering, but you know, it was a tough go of it. But thoughts and prayers to them that they get well. And also some big news out of the Big Ten: a third of the players have myocarditis, which is pretty much an enlarged heart, which is, you know, horrible in normal circumstances. And then with COVID, and as you recall, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they postponed their seasons. So it is good that they did, because this is, you know, there would definitely have been extra complications with regards to this. And we did just, you know, all over the wire about an hour ago, the Pac-12 is working on a rapid testing with another company. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but they're trying to really push to start playing again after they said they were canceling the season just not even a month ago. Yeah. I think they should just cancel the season, let it go, and you know, start it back up next year. You know, the other conferences, they decided to let it, you know, to keep going. I mean, they should have all been uniform in the decision, but they didn't. I don't know if they should rush back after being so dead set on not playing because of the COVID issues, and just don't rush out a test there. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with you there, man. I mean, you cancel the season. Better safe than sorry. I mean, the last thing you need is for, God forbid, somebody to get really sick. I mean, just getting back to The Rock for a quick second. I mean, here's a guy who's fit, who's active. And like he said, you know, he had to deal with it pretty bad. I mean, when you get COVID, man, it is awful. Like you're sweating, the headache lasts for like 4 or 5 days. If you get like a headache like that, you don't eat, you lose your sense of smell. It's not fun. So for a guy like that and his whole family, his kids got it, his wife got it. I mean, if you're one of these people who doubts wearing a mask, or even if you have, you say, oh, well, COVID, Dwayne The Rock Johnson got COVID. I mean, if you're a doubter, you should open your eyes and listen to what he says and wear a mask and you know, social distance and follow the CDC guidelines. But getting back to the Pac-12, I think a lot of this is political pressure. I think pressure from the parents who want to get these kids playing. A lot of these kids want to get ready for the NFL draft. But I think the problem with college football is there wasn't a unified voice. You got the SEC playing. What's that? The ACC, I think, is playing as well. And then there's another I forget the other conference is playing. But I think a lot of that is political. I think a lot of it is, you know, we're going to play and we're going to show you. And then the Big Ten and the Big
– Big Ten and the Pac-12.
They said, you know what, we're following the science. But even if you have a rapid test, again, these kids aren't making any money. It's not like they're getting paid. It's not like they're, you know, making millions of dollars to put their lives on the line. God forbid one of these kids gets COVID and then they have this heart condition and they die. And then what happens? I mean, what do you say to a parent then? You can't justify that. So look, as far as I'm concerned, you cancel the season, stick with the plan of canceling the season, be a leader. You're going to take some political heat, or you're going to just stick to your guns. You canceled it. It's canceled. This is the reason why. And if parents are going to be upset at you and pick at you and what have you, so be it, man. But stand on stand on principle here and take a stand and the season, it's over. And that's it.
Yep. No, absolutely. And we had to touch on that. And get that out of the way and notify you of what was going on. We are going to be bringing on our next guest. Joining us now is Andrew Noher. He is the founder and CEO of MediaX Partners, and they are building a platform called Recode.
Hey guys,
Andrew, how are you?
How's it going?
Doing great, doing great.
I don't know how to follow that spirited discussion. It's got me all fired up now. So,
Well, listen, man, it's an open forum.
The bar is raised now, so it's gonna be a challenge.
You can handle. I've seen you before. I know you're up to the task here. So briefly, you know, me and Andrew, we're in the same cohort, the Game Plan U cohort. You know, I'm in for my company Playing the Field, you know, trying to build our sports fan community, trying to unite sports fans. And his product is Recode, where it's, you know, so we're trying to make memories, and Recode is trying to keep them.
Right.
You know, they're trying, you know, to try and share them with everybody, share them so you could view all these great memories that you're making through, you know, through just going to games or, you know, tailgates or pretty much whatever. It doesn't have to be sports, you know, any kind of memories that you want to keep, share and share with your friends. But tell us a little bit more about it, Andrew.
Well, that's actually a great description. Yeah, it's meant to be a collaborative content platform, as we like to say, that originally designed for family and friends to create multimedia digital scrapbooks. and then be able to share those across social media if they want, or they can keep it private and select, you know, readers for that. So, you know, whatever happens in the NAR family stays in the NAR family, you know, that kind of thing. And but we really found a tremendous amount of interest in the sports and entertainment world, you know, pre-COVID, with you know, there were teams were really trying to, they were looking for more creative ways to really engage with fans. And I think also to kind of help control the digital experience that's online, you know, because their content is fighting with everybody else's content on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And those are great, you know, great platforms and things like that. But we wanted to take it to kind of a different level, just where we feel like it was evolving the social media experiences that let people collaborate with the people that they know, but then also give them a chance to collaborate maybe with their favorite teams, their favorite players, their favorite entertainers, and to share their favorite memories. Because this, you know, we go to events, whether we're there live or, like you said, if you're tailgating outside the stadium, or if you're, you know, at your local sports bar watching it with friends, or just at home, you know, and having friends and family over, you know, for a watch party, that kind of thing. We're always taking pictures and videos, but 99% of that stuff never sees the light of day. Yeah, and which is kind of which is a tragedy, because especially for sports fans, the things that we love to do are relive our favorite memories. I mean, I'm the first one to raise my hand and say I will go to YouTube, you know, looking for 2004 playoffs, you know, Red Sox over Yankees, and sit there and. Four hours later, I'm in a rabbit hole of about 22 videos that have nothing. I'm watching Manny Ramirez videos again before I know what I'm doing. So, but it's that same tie to, you know, the emotional tie that we have with those teams and those seasons and those players. That's the greatest algorithm ever created. You don't have to create an algorithm to manipulate people when it comes to their emotions over, you know, their favorite teams, or, you know, or our favorite game or something like that. So we're trying to create a platform where people can, you know, kind of come together, reminisce, but be able to save all those, put it in a, you know, organize it in a way that's fun, especially in more of a book format that we're kind of used to, that fun of, you know, the scrapbook that you'd see at your grandparents' house, or maybe that your parents did. We want to recreate the fun and excitement out of putting that together, but then going back and be able to relive it whenever you want.
Awesome. But before we dive deep into, you know, your pretty much your sports fandom and your fan experiences, just thank you for throwing some shade at my boy Rick over there. See, I told you you could.
Sorry. Oh yeah, that's right. Maybe we're getting going now, so we'll see.
So tell our viewers, like, how can they sign up for Recode? You know, what do they have to do?
Well, we're still in the process of finishing the product out. We hope to have it available later this year. So we're that's where our situation is right now. So yeah.
Is there any waiting list that they can sign up or anything?
If you go to www.recode.com, there is a place on there where you can sign up to be on a email list when we get closer to launch. So,
okay, great. Everyone, you know, please go to recode.com and sign up on the wait list. Rick, mm-hmm. I'll let you take.
Andy, pleasure to meet you. You know,
it's
funny. You have all these memories. I mean, you know, you know, the Reds, you know, you're a fan of the Red Sox, the Cowboys, Roger Staubach. I mean, I could only imagine all the scrapbooks you can come up with watching Roger Staubach or the great Cowboys of the 70s. You know, but I want to get into that because you were born in Texas, but you were raised in Oklahoma. Right. Yet somehow by reading about Ted Williams, you became a Red Sox fan. I mean, tell our viewers about that.
Yeah, actually, I have to blame my mom for that, because she was a reading teacher in junior high, and of course, she and my father were both voracious readers. But she they bought the entire Encyclopedia Britannica for me. And so I just started reading through everything. And then, of course, I really loved, you know, American history and things like that. But for some reason, all the stories that related to Boston really caught my attention. And so I just kind of fell in love with Boston. Of course, being from Oklahoma, Boston was like a foreign country. You know, it's like Boston, that's one of these days I'm going to get on a boat and I'm going to get there, you know, or something like so. So it had a sense of mystery to it, but I just always really enjoyed the history surrounding Boston. So I just kind of adopted Boston. I was a big baseball fan anyway. And at the time, we really didn't have pro teams. The Royals had just changed over from they were the Kansas City A's and they got moved to Oakland and they just changed over to the Royals early in the 70s. So that was kind of the closest city. And then Dallas, Fort Worth. They didn't get the Rangers, you know, until a little past that, early in the 70s. So there wasn't really a true baseball team close. And I just couldn't, find a way to like any other team around. So Boston became my team. And then, you know, reading on about Ted Williams and all of those guys. And, of course, the first year that that I fell in love with was Fred Lynn's rookie year. So I fell in, you know, Fred Lynn and Joe Rudy and Roger Staubach were the first three posters in my bedroom. So so I was a big Fred Lynn fan. And then, of course, it just stayed with it. And then probably the defining moment was game 6 of 75. It was a school night and my mom let me stay up to watch Fisk hit the home run. To win that game. And so then it was cemented. I was going to take all the anguish for the next 30 years. I was totally in and committed at that point. Those were great times. But yeah, the Cowboys of the 70s, you know, early 80s were, of course, tremendous memories to the point where if they lost, I thought God was mad at me. So I would pray every Monday before I'd go to school, like, God, forgive me for the Cowboys losing. I don't want anybody to be mad at me. I don't know what it was I did, but please forgive me. You know, if I need to sacrifice a small animal or something to atone for my sin. So because we have to play the Redskins next week or the Giants next week, you know, or the Cardinals, we need that victory. So I'll do whatever possible. So, very emotionally involved with my teams, but was so fortunate, you know, to grow up during that time. You know, you're talking about Tom Seaver and to know Tom Seaver, not only with the Mets, but, you know, to see his second stint with the Reds, you know, where I think he ended up he came in second for the Cy Young, one of those, you know, so to see a master like that continue to grow, that was such a unique time. For sports and, you know, just these workhorse players that one stayed with the team for a long time, you know, but just kept playing and kept churning and doing it at a top level too.
Now, speaking of Seaver, he played for the Red Sox. Like,
up till like 82, I think he played for a season or two. Yeah, he retired from the Red Sox. Yeah.
And, you know, what do you remember? I don't, you know, back in those times, but what do you remember when you hear about Tom Seaver, when he pitched, like when he was with the Mets, with the Reds, obviously with the White Sox? I mean, what are your memories about how he played the game? I mean, the lasting impact that he had on baseball.
It seemed like back then you really looked at the pitcher as the quarterback. Like he would be on the level of a Roger Staubach, you know, or a Terry Bradshaw or somebody like that. I mean, they were the guy. And you expected those guys to go 7 or 8 or 9 innings. It's like if they got pulled in the fifth, you're like, who is this guy? Who needs this?
Yeah, right. You know,
bringing in 3 relievers. What? This isn't baseball. So this is church league softball. So, you know, you just expected that those guys, one, they wanted the ball. They were a competitor. They were in there like the Bob Gibsons of the world and the Nolan Ryans and, you know, all of those. You just those guys wanted the ball and you knew it was going to be between those two starting pitchers. It wasn't going to be this bringing in a reliever here, you know, the strategy of the bullpen, that was those guys were going mano a mano. And I think that that was the beauty of watching those guys pitch, is that they were in there with the mindset that they were going to go nine innings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different world now.
It's for better and for worse,
you know, at the same
time. Yeah, I know. I'm still trying to deal with the DH. I haven't come down on that side. I mean, I don't like to see a pitcher hit, but then I do like to see it because that's part of strategy. You know, it's part of the game. You know, how do you deal with that? So, but of course, being an Ortiz fan, I'm very glad that we have the designated hitter. So if you're out there listening, Big Poppy, I love the DH. So.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
just not in 2004.
Right? Well, we'll get into that.
Oh, we could spend plenty of time on that. So I've got video and pictures, and we can relive the whole thing if you want. I promise. I got it right here.
We have all, I mean, I know I definitely watched that one closely. Oh, he's throwing some shade at you, Rick.
All right.
Oh.
Well, I came ready because I didn't know who we were going to talk about tonight. So
since we're talking a little bit more about baseball and the Red Sox, so we know what happened in 2004.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it. You liked it. Rick, not so much. But we still like Rick. So, but there's a memory in that ballpark that you have that, you know, I'm sure you've recorded, right? And you have it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But tell us about that day and how it came, you know, to play out. How did you manage it? You know, just fill us in.
Okay. Well, I was very blessed to be able to re-fall in love with the girl of my dreams from high school.
Oh, wow.
And so in 2014, late in September 26th, Tuesday night against the Tampa Bay Rays, I was able to coordinate to get on the field before the game and propose to her. And I got to work with the Hotel Commonwealth, which is the official hotel with the Red Sox, and some people inside the Red Sox kind of helped coordinate different things. It was what was strange, and I didn't tell her about this until much, much later, but it was actually planned 3 weeks before, and I got a call saying some things have come up and you won't be able to get on the field. You won't be able to do this. We only have one other date left, and of course, it was the last homestand of the season. And of course they were already out of the playoffs at that time. So it wasn't, you know, any big deal. So it's like, okay, great. Because we were planning on getting married on the 29th of September. So I'm having to go hold her off. Like, you know, are we going to get engaged? You know, there is kind of an official step before. Yeah, I thought, well, we do it all at once. I got the all-inclusive package, so I'll get engaged, and then we'll walk down the aisle, and we'll get it all done. You know, this is a new generation, and this is how the kids are doing it these days. So when it all worked out, got to take her there under the guise that I was going to Boston for a business trip. You know, she said, well, we'd be able to go to a game. I said, you know, I don't know if we'll get tickets or not, if I'll have time to do it. So the hotel and work with me to when I came in the morning, that Tuesday morning, walking past the front desk, they said, oh, by the way, we're going to have, we have two tickets available. If you, and you know, your girlfriend would like to go. We said, oh gosh. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, she was all excited that we're going to go to the game, and then they timed it. For about 2 hours later, they called up to the room and said, oh, by the way, we've been able to coordinate a tour of the stadium for you, you know, compliments of the hotel. But you need to go over and be at this door at this time to go in. So we did. We went over there, and I'm like, oh, isn't this awesome? This is so cool. I can't believe it. And of course, she was so excited, too. And then They opened the door, and they had some other tour groups go around, but they had an official young lady from the Red Sox came right up to us and said, "Oh, you're Andrew and Amy, right?" And we said, "Yes." And so she said, "Let's go." So off we went, and she just started doing a, you know, personal tour, and took us up on, you know, the Green Monster. And of course I'm sitting there going, you know, we got to get moving here and whatever. So finally we get down on the field, and right as we get down on the field, they were finishing up batting practice, and we thought they were going to move the cage. And I was getting ready, you know, to go into action. Then all of a sudden, Poppy steps in and wants to take batting practice. So we're having to sit there and wait. Of course, my, you know, my girlfriend at the time, my wife, was totally glued in on David Ortiz. She's a big Red Sox fan too. I thought, well, yeah. I've lost her now. There's no way this is going to happen. It was like I was going to actually walk over to Poppy and say, "Could you give this ring and ask her to marry not you, but me? But just point to me, and you know, we'll be fine." Yeah. So he didn't take as long. He finally got done. The crowd moved away. They moved, moved the backstop, and this young lady who was taking us on the tour, I gave her the phone and I said, "Oh, by the way, would you, you know, take a picture of us before we leave?" And I winked at her and she looked at me and she said, I'm tearing up. I think I'm going to blow it. I can't keep it together." And I said, "Well, you're going to have to, because you've got to take the picture and you got to make sure that, you know, that this gets memorialized." So I went over there and I said, "Okay," well, she took one picture, and then I said, "Would you take one more?" And then I got down on my knee and proposed, which was fantastic. And then I look over at this young lady and she was shaking with the phone, and she was bawling. You know, I don't even know if she could see, but she was bawling. And then she gave the phone to me. She said, "I am so sorry," because I had it turned on video, and she hit it and turned it back to camera, but she just kept her finger down on camera. So it looks like one of those Zoetrope films of like, you know, 120 different frames of it going on. But just for fun, we'll slide through it and see it kind of, you know, look like one of those old films. Yeah. So we got done with that. And then she said, "Well, we want to walk you over to your seats for tonight." And we said, "Oh, great." You know, because we had good seats. I mean, they were down on the lower level. But they walked us over and they opened it and they put us right behind home plate. And I'll tell you how cool this is. When you're sitting at this spot, so somebody's paid so much money to sit in that spot that you're right there. There's the batting circle, and then there's home plate, just literally, you know, arms reach from you. But there's a big screen TV sitting in front of you too. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, how important do you have to be that close and still get a big screen TV to watch as it's going on? So, you know, we're sitting there and we're kind of flushed with after everything's going on. And then the head groundskeeper comes over to us and said, "We hear it's a special night for you. We don't do this often, but the Red Sox would like for you all to paint in home plate before the game starts." And of course, now I'm bawling like a baby at this point. So I'm like, "Amy, you're going to have to throw me over your shoulder and carry me out there and hold me up so we can do this." So we're, and of course she's, you know, tearing up too. And there's a big crowd. And of course, obviously we have two thoughts. One, you know, how amazing is it to have this opportunity, a once in a lifetime, you know, even for a diehard Red Sox fan who's lived in Boston all their life, and to have, you know, these two kids from Oklahoma come in and they're getting to paint in, you know, the sacred hallowed ground of home plate. But the second part was not messing up, because I didn't want the true Boston fans to start dropping the F-bombs at us for the poor performance that we did in painting in home plate. So you had this great excitement and then nerve, right? But people were cheering for us. It was really cool. You know, they took pictures of us. And then as we walked off, Clay Buchholz, who was pitching that night, and his wife were down on field. They were presenting a check for a charity or something, and they came up and said, you know, congratulations and hope you have a good night. And then, of course, later around the sixth inning, you know, they put congratulations, Amy and Andrew, up on the scoreboard as well. But the, you know, in the middle of all that, the biggest problem was we couldn't get good Wi-Fi. So people were texting in trying to say, well, did you do it yet? You know, they, because we've been keeping this as a secret, and I couldn't send anything out, and we were getting bombarded, you know, and of course people wanted to know, and which was cool. But yeah, I mean, that I relive that every day. That just one of the most, the Red Sox were amazing to, you know, go beyond and do what they did. And then, of course, the Hotel Commonwealth was great to work with as well. I mean, it just was it was just perfect in every possible way.
That's an incredible story.
That sounds like an amazing day.
Yeah. In fact, let's see. There's the scoreboard.
Oh, look at that!
I think I have. No, but yeah, it was just a fantastic. We get asked about it, you know, all the time, and it's funny actually. Here where we live, we ran it in a grocery store. We ran into a professor at one of the local universities who moved here from Boston with his wife with his two kids, and I had on a Red Sox pullover, and we just started chatting, and they walked away, and I walked over to him a little bit later because we saw him, and I said, oh, by the way, you know, I don't know if you can see it well, but here's a picture of us at home plate. I said, I proposed to my wife, and he literally stopped everything and his mouth dropped. And he looked at his daughter, who was like 5 or 6 at the most, and said, that's the man you want to marry. Is that guy right there who will. And so that was pretty neat, you know, to, you know, be able to share that with other Red Sox fans.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So I wanted to get it, now that we spent some time on the Red Sox, I wanted to get into this other aspect. Now, you were a Dallas Cowboy fan. Now, on this show, you can't be a fan of one or the other. You're both. So you're a Chiefs fan. But this story intrigues me because you were a Cowboys fan. Jerry Jones buys the Cowboys. Yeah. He fires Landry, and he brings in Jimmy Johnson. And you said, enough is enough? Tell us about that.
Well, and Jimmy and I go way back because he coached at Oklahoma State.
Right.
Which, you know, we'll leave it at that. But
Barry Switzer at the time or no?
When
he was at
OU. I'm trying to remember when he was, who he coached against. I'll have to.
Yeah,
kind of fuzzy on those years when he's there. But yeah, it would be because Barry left late in the 80s.
So they were
against it, but he was obviously a great coach, obviously a great mind, you know, ahead of the game for sure at that time. But it wasn't as much that, of course, I didn't like that he was fired, but what else can you do? I guess there could have been a different way of handling it at a time. Landry's time had come for sure. I mean, Cowboy fans kind of knew that for at least 3 years. You know, if not more, we kind of knew that his approach to the game was old school, and it was really starting to get. And of course, that was also the onset of, you know, Miami University, you know, college. The college game was transitioning too, and the pros were getting slow, but they were starting to adopt that. So that was really hard. But I was living in Kansas City at the time. Working, and that was when Schottenheimer was brought in, and that whole new regime was brought to bear, and it was really starting to be exciting. It's like, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, Landry's gone. I don't really have any more connection there. I'm here in Kansas City, a town that I just absolutely love and adore, and we've got this new chapter, and I'm going to be a part of that. So I kind of embrace that, and then of course I, you know, sit and watch the Cowboys go and win three Super Bowls, but they did win one with Barry. So, but I was good because, you know, I love I still have a great affinity for the Cowboys too, and I want to see them do well. But yeah, that I didn't think I'd get that emotional about it, but it, you know, this is a guy that I grew up with. I mean, he was like your favorite uncle, Tom Landry. You know, he was just part of the family. And to think that he, one, that he was gone, but kind of treated that the way that he was, that really bothered me. But you know, that's all, you know, buried now, long past. So
it's good, Mike.
So how do you feel about your new team now? The Chiefs,
the greatest team in the world. You mean the dynasty?
Yeah. Hey, listen.
I tell you what, I have never been as excited in a draft the night that we picked Patrick Mahomes, because I was fortunate enough, being a Big 12 fan, obviously, we, you know, get to see Patrick. Of course, there was that great 230 to 229 game between Baker and Pat. And so I was very fortunate to kind of to see how good he was, but also see the potential and to know the pedigree that he had with his dad being, you know, the great pitcher that he was for the Twins and the Dodgers. You know, sometimes you look at DNA and you think there's going to be something special there. And he definitely showed signs of that. And I felt like, well, one, for the Chiefs to even trade up in the draft, one, I think – the heart attack that took everybody as a Chiefs fan at that time. So who are these guys? What's happened? You know, am I hearing that right? And so to get over that initial shock that even happened, you know, a strategic move, but then to pick him, I thought, man, they are very, very serious. And of course I, you know, love Alex Smith. I'm so sorry what happened to him in Washington, but he was a great guy. I knew he could mentor him, but I felt like Patrick was something special, but they've also done the right thing in getting the talent around him. You know, that it's so hard. You know, of course, I've been having to see like guys I love, like Sam Bradford, and, you know, hopefully Baker gets better. But, you know, some of our guys and some of these other really talented guys at quarterback that go number one, but they go to these horrible teams and they're just beaten up. I mean, Troy Aikman, you know, he was beaten up for 2 or 3 years, just pummeled. And that probably shortened his career, and you hate to see that. But the Chiefs have done it right. And, of course, now locking him in place, being creative with the contract that allows them to get the other, especially the defense in place. Mm-hmm. I feel really good about where they're going. Whether that's this hangover – from the Super Bowl, that's going to affect them? I don't think so. I think they're a different breed. Reed has hit his stride. He's comfortable in his system and coaching these guys. And, of course, they believe in him, and they believe in – the players believe in him and believe in the organization. And they've done it. You know, they got over the hill. They finally beat the Patriots. You know, they won at home, which, you know, I've sat at those playoff home games in Kansas City and seen those terrible losses where we had the best record in the, you know, the AFC. And I'm not going to mention the name Lynn Elliott, but you know, those nightmares. But yeah, I think they're set up. You know, of course, injuries still play a big role in it, but it's exciting. I mean, they play an exciting brand of football, and it's been interesting to see how the other teams are trying to follow their blueprint.
Andy, did you saw the whole play at Baylor, obviously. Did you think he was going to be this good? I mean, $500 million contract. I mean, he owns part of the Royals. I mean, just the way he does. I mean, did you guys – I mean, I know you're excited when you got him, but did you think he was going to be what he's become? I mean, he's like
– Well, I wish I had texted this to a friend, but I actually talked to a friend afterwards. After the draft, I said, I can see us going, not winning, but I can see us going to the Super Bowl the next 5 or 6 years with him. Okay. Only because he just had possessed such a raw, not only talent, but just the way he played. I mean, there, if you really watch the Texas Tech highlights, there's so many things where he had to do on his own. He was scrambling. the protection was breaking down. There's just so many of those big plays were all just him freelancing. Yeah. And again, I think it comes back to that DNA of he had a dad, you know, was a very good competitive major league pitcher that has to wear. And of course, he's been in sports. And I think the way his dad brought him up and taught him, I think that really helped that he was coming from a different perspective than other guys who just kind of grow up playing that, you know, their father, parents may not have played sports, but they just grew up and they were a natural athlete. But I think there's just something different when you have that lineage involved and you can see it. You know, that arm is just, it probably should be classified, you know, as some kind of national treasure, special weapon or something. But that is just one amazing arm. But he has the intelligence to go along with it. So
And he, you know, overhand.
From the side. He's going to go between his legs sometime this year. I've got a feeling. I mean, I'm already expecting. You guys should do an over and under on that. So let's see when that's going to happen.
Well, but, we did have him winning the division easily.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, I think so. I think so. But I think the Chargers will be competitive, but I think this is a different team. You know,
Chargers,
different
Broncos. We like the Broncos.
I'm sorry. No, sorry.
Well, speaking of Patrick Mahomes, of proposals, congratulations to Patrick Mahomes and his
fiance,
you know, together since high school.
Right. Right.
That's great. And, you know, they both got a ring on the same day. Same week. Right. So congratulations to them.
Yeah. And, I bet her ring was more expensive than his, but, you know, because he could.
Well, he had a lot of blood, sweat, packed into it.
Yeah.
He could afford it with $500 million contract.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I think they actually airlifted it onto her finger, if I heard right. So it took like a crew to get it on there. So, yeah. But that's a great story, too. And I think that shows a lot about him.
Yeah,
too, the person that he is, to stick with someone like that, and those kind of those relationships like that are important to him too. So,
yeah, he seems like a really good kid, and definitely hope for the best for him, and hope to see him, you know, win one or two more Super Bowls. But if it's between, you know, the Chiefs and the Jets in the AFC Championship game, well.
We'll be rooting for the Jets.
Yeah, I was wondering. I wonder what side you guys will be on.
So we're getting up against the clock here.
Sure.
But just tell us about, you know, obviously we try to preach, you know, community and sports fans. It's like, you know, what do you see as far as, you know, when you converse with sports fans, you know, other than non-sports fans, and how, you know, how the relationships between the two, you know, kind of differ a little bit.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because getting kind of tying back into what you guys are originally talking about with the, you know, ACC and SEC and the big, it's actually the Big 12 is the other that's playing. I think it's because there's so much of an emotional, mental tie-in to these schools, whether you're a graduate or not, that has a very strong, healthy, for some people it can be unhealthy, but it really has these great, strong, healthy relationships, because they do produce these memories that do bring happiness to us. Even, you know, I still have my Boise State, Oklahoma memories. I still have, you know, anytime Texas beats OU, because my wife's a Texas fan, that's miserable. But I think sports has this unique way of bringing us all together, regardless of our beliefs, regardless of our backgrounds. And I think the power of sports is so beneficial in helping people, I think, grieve. I think that was one thing that, you know, during COVID was so hard for people, is that, you know, I didn't get the Masters on the Masters weekend. I didn't get opening day. You know, I didn't get March Madness. You know, all all of those things. Because, you know, even then, people that aren't diehard sports fans, they love March Madness, you know, and they love, you know, the first of base, you know, baseball is also spring and we're looking for summer and that kind of, you know, the renewal and all those type of things. So even for people that are just the casual fan, you know, to see those things that are standard or normal not be there, I think it was kind of, we all kind of had a grieving process through this, is that it was something as comfortable and we didn't have that to rely on. And then it was, well, are we going to have college football? Are we going to have pro football? Are we going to have, you know, the NBA? Are we even going to have baseball? You know, of course, the Red Sox. Now, the Red Sox should have just quit this season. They should have just said, hey, by the way, guys, it was nice knowing you. We're going to wait till 2020.
I think they did.
They did. They did, I think. But I think it's there's that such that power. And because, like, you know, what you guys, and your brilliant concept of bringing people together, because that is such a strong bond, you know, that why not build a relationship built off of a love of sports? I mean, that's, you know, my wife and I, you know, we love sports tremendously. Our kids love sports. My daughter moved to Maine a couple of years ago after graduating OU, and her first weekend of OU Texas, she went, you know, in her OU garb, and she got to school in Maine. Remember, this is Maine. And everybody was just going about their business, and it really made her angry, because it's like, why don't you guys understand this is OU Texas weekend? How come we're you know, what side are you on? You know, so we all kind of carry, you know, that importance and that relationship. And I'm glad to see sports back. Obviously, you know, hopefully we'll get back to a true normal next year. But like I said, you know, that communal aspect is so important to us, and it's very much the fabric of America, but, you know, even overseas. I mean, the Premier League, when they weren't playing, because I love following them, and you know, very passionate fans, and it was interesting to see the blogs and talk about, they just didn't know what to do. They didn't know where to channel that energy. You know, what do I do? Where does this rage go? What, you know, who do I be mad at? But I think that's what we see now, is that, but I also think that community has helped others get through this too, that we can sit and talk about our favorite memories. We can sit and talk about what makes us love the Red Sox or the Chiefs or the Sooners, or if you go to the extreme, the Yankees, I guess, you know, or the Jets. What makes us love this? And so you do find that common ground. And I think that's been, you know, that's got carried people through as well. They really understand that unique bond that sports creates for all of us. You know, even for us, you know, having opposing likes and teams, but we can still have a discussion, because the common denominator is that we love, you know, Major League Baseball. We love pro football. We love this. So.
Absolutely. You have anything, Rick?
Yeah. Final question for me quickly. I know we're against the clock. Best coach of in Oklahoma Sooner history, Barry, was it Bob Stoops or Barry Switt?
Oh man. Now I don't know if I can let this get out or not, but I have loved Bob tremendously, because you know, the way he came back in and said, we're embracing the history, we're embracing the past, we're the University of Oklahoma, we don't need to be, you know, because we had some down years, some really down years, but he embraced that. He embraced bringing Barry back and all those former players and things like that. But there's something about Barry that's pretty unique, and very, you know, he was very proud to be the coach. He'd take on anybody. You know, he wanted to take on USC all the time. He wanted to take on Notre Dame. He wanted to take on Texas, you know, hang half a hundred on him. You know, he didn't back down. And I think that did a lot for the state too, because of, you know, the state of Oklahoma feels like the small younger brother of the lower 48. So, but I think Barry, of course, you know, Barry one in the 70s and the 80s. You know, people can argue all they want about his Super Bowl win with the Cowboys, but he endured. And of course, I tell you, those teams in the 70s were some of the most dominant, and I still think the most dominant teams ever in college football. And he was a pretty young guy when he took over too. So I think that says a lot to him. You know, he endured, he was able to transition for a while, but Bob's pretty close. But I tell you what, my boy Lincoln.
Yeah.
There's going to be a statue for him in Heisman Park probably in the next 2 or 3 years, because that guy's got it going on, and he's got the recruits believing in him. You know, he's picking them from all across the country, but he just plays a fantastic style of football. And again, embraces the history of OU too, you know, having Bob there, having Barry, you know, on the sidelines, being a part of things. I think that's all part of that as well. So.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, thank you for coming on.
Great. Appreciate it, guys.
With you, man.
Yeah. You guys are great.
Thank you very much. Thank you for watching the show. Thank you for supporting the show.
Oh, you bet.
Thank you for coming on. You know, I'm sure we're going to be talking plenty after this anyway. But
you bet.
Thank you again. And everybody, please go to www.recody.com and sign up for the wait list. It should be coming out soon, and you'll get notified when it's out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
Have a great one. Talk to you soon. You bet.
Right. Have a good night.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. Man, that was awesome.
All right.
That is a good idea, though. You know, that's like a scrapbook with all like the history of your sports. Like, if I saw a scrapbook of 2004, like the day after, like, take all the pictures, and like me walking into work, and Alex is like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not okay. Like, I'm not doing well right now." Like, I would love a scrapbook like that. That'd be awesome. And all the jet cut collapses, we can do a scrapbook about that. We could do a scrapbook of the last 20 years of the Knicks and their debacles. I mean, can I go on?
Yeah, I can go on. Well, with the Knicks, you can go on and on.
Yeah, we can go on for 2 decades, but we won't go there.
So, well, obviously, today I got the Jets jersey on. Yeah, today is AFC East Day.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
Like we always like to do is leave the best for last. So we're going to leave the Jets for the last.
Yeah.
So let's start.
It's going to be painful, but go ahead.
Let's start with the, you know, the pretty much the old reliable, and who's been at the top the leaderboard for what, 12, 13 years now?
20 years. Stinking New England Patriots.
New England Patriots are set at an over-under of 8.5, and they have just announced that Cam Newton will be the starter for the team in week one.
Yep.
Week one, they take on Miami in New England.
That's a win.
At Seattle with Cam Newton.
We gave it a loss.
Yeah, that's a one and one.
Yeah.
Against the Raiders.
The travel. That's a win.
Yeah, I think the Patriots win that. 2-1 at Kansas City, not happening. Yeah, 2-2. Versus Denver.
See, this is an interesting game, man. I did we pick Denver in this one?
I give it to Denver. 2-3.
Okay.
Bye week versus San Fran in New England. 2-4.
Yeah, San Fran's winning that game.
Yeah. At Buffalo, 2-5. Buffalo wins that game at home.
Okay.
At the New York Jets, 8-15 on a Monday night.
Oof. You know what? I got to give this. I think I'm going to give this one to my beloved Jets. They're going to split. Yeah. I'm giving it to my Jets.
2-6. First Baltimore in New England.
They're losing that.
It's a Sunday night.
They're losing that game. Baltimore's right. Winning that game.
2-7. I mean, where are they getting these wins? They got to have some there. Yeah. At Houston.
Bill O'Brien always ends up screwing up. I don't know.
They don't have like an easy schedule.
No, they don't. And Houston's a tough team at home, man.
2-8, man.
2-8, yeah.
Versus Arizona at home, I think they could win. They could win that game.
Now, again, we talked about it. I think we talked about the NFC West. Arizona, you know, they got DeAndre Hopkins out there. They got Larry Fitz. Kyler's coming off a second year. Kingsbury's got a second year. So we'll keep an eye on that. But right now we'll go with the Patriots on that.
Then they have both LA teams, starting with the Chargers in a four-day span.
Yeah, they're destroying the Chargers.
So they're splitting, right?
They're beating the Chargers and losing to the Rams.
Yeah. So that's 4-9.
They're splitting with Miami, so that's 4-10.
4-10. And then they got Buffalo and the Jets at Foxborough both.
So 5-11?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. We got them at 5-11. What's the over-under on this?
8.5.
Jesus.
We gave them a win against the Raiders. We gave them a win against the Dolphins. I don't know. I think it's fair.
It's fair, and this is not the same Patriot team. And
they have a great defense, but there's a lot of teams here that have explosive offenses.
Yeah.
And good defenses on top. All right, so let's go with the seller and Miami Dolphins, the tank for Tua, even though they got Tua, but they didn't tank.
Yeah, he's starting after the bye, by the way. But
okay, so at New England, we already said that was a loss, 0-1. Versus Buffalo, they're not taking out Buffalo, 1-0-2.
Well, now it's an early game in Miami, and it's going to be hot.
Yeah, I can't.
Good coach. Okay, I'll go 1-1.
All right, I'm going 0-2. So you keep your running tally there.
Yeah.
At Jacksonville.
Jacksonville just traded away
Leonard Fournette.
Yeah. Well, they released him. Yeah.
Yep.
Jacksonville's tanking, man. I'm giving that one to Miami.
Yeah. 1-2.
I got
versus Seattle. It is a travel, but it's Seattle.
Yeah, we'll go 2-2 on that one.
2-2. Well, you're 1-3 now.
No, I got them beating. I got them. No, wait. I got them losing that New England. I got them winning home against Buffalo and beating Jacksonville. So I got them at 2-2.
Oh, I got so I got them 3-1. There we go.
Yeah.
I got them 2-2. At San Francisco,
it's a loss.
At Denver,
that's a loss.
Yeah. So I got them at 5-2, 5-1.
I got them at 2-4.
I mean, my bad. 3-3.
I got them at 2-4. I got them beating Buffalo, beating Jacksonville. Yeah, I got them at 2-4.
Oh no, I got them 1-5.
You got them 1-5. Yeah,
1-5. Yeah. Versus the Chargers, versus the Rams, both at home.
They beat the Chargers, so I got them at 3-4, and they lose to the Rams. I got them at 3-5.
2-6. I got them at Arizona, 2-7.
Yeah. I got them at 3-6.
Versus the Jets.
They're splitting. So I'll give this one to the Jets.
Jets there. No. No.
I mean, they're home. So home. So I'll give that to the Jets.
3-7.
So I got them at 4-7.
3-7 I got them at.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Then it's a bye week, and then they play the Jets again?
Yeah.
That's weird.
So they're splitting that. So we got them at 3-8 then. No. 4-8.
That's the one that they lose. 3-8. Well, yeah. First Cincinnati. I'm pretty sure we gave that one to Cincinnati, did we not?
It's a home game, yep.
So 3-9. First Kansas City, and not happening. 3-10. Mm-hmm. First New England at home. We gave them that one, right?
Yep.
4-10. At the Raiders.
Nope. 4-11.
4-11, and they're not beating Buffalo at in Buffalo. 4-12. That's definitely not in January 3rd. No.
Oh, yeah.
4-12. They fall short of their six.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go on to that frozen tundra from the east.
Western New York. The Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills. Only New York team.
Yeah.
Versus the New York Jets at home.
They're going to split. So yeah, I'll give them all.
They're taking the one at home. 1-0 at Miami.
I got about 1-1.
Yeah, I got them at 2-0. Mm-hmm. First the Rams at home.
2-1. I think we give the Rams an L on this.
That would give you 2.
I got them at 2-1.
Then I think we're back even because I'm giving the Rams the win. 2-1. I don't know.
2-1. I got them at 2-1. Then they go to Vegas. They lose
no,
out.
No, they're not losing to the Rams. No, it's 3-0. 3-0.
Wow. Okay. Oh, that's right. The Rams are traveling. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, yeah, exactly.
So I got them at 3-0. Yeah.
Okay. At Vegas.
3-1. At Tennessee, 3-2.
They lose at Vegas?
Yeah, they're losing at Vegas. They got to travel. It's a 425 game, Sunday game of the week. Oh, what's one of the Sunday games?
All right, I'll give you Vegas. I'll give you Tennessee, but I don't know about.
So you're going. You're 4-1. You're 4-0, and them going into Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm giving them 4-1 coming out of week 5.
I'm going 3-2 going into Kansas City, and they go 3-3. Kansas City's winning that game.
4-3 for me.
I got them at
4-2 for me. Yeah,
I got them at 3-3. At
the Jets, they're losing that one. 4-3.
So I got them at 3-4.
First, New England and Buffalo.
4-4.
Yeah, because we had them splitting, right? 4-4. Mm-hmm. Seattle.
In 5-4.
5-4. They could beat them. Yeah, at Arizona.
I think we gave this one to Arizona because of the travel.
I think we did. 5-5.
5-5, okay. Then they're at the bye. Then the Chargers come in.
6-5.
And they go to
at San Francisco, 6-6. First Pittsburgh. I think I had Buffalo beating Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
7-6. At Denver.
7-7.
Yeah. At New England.
They're splitting.
7-8, and then they beat Miami, 8-8.
What's the over under?
8.5.
Yeah. Yeah. Vegas has it right.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
All right, best for last, everybody.
Here we go, everybody. Okay. Our beloved New York football Jets. The true New York team.
Over under 6.5.
Oh, geez.
We started off at Buffalo. We already said they started off with a loss. It's okay. Oh. It's okay. They'll bounce
back. All right, so far, so good.
0-1. Okay. Yeah. First San Francisco in New York. Yeah.
A travel game, too.
I don't care. It's San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco 0-2.
At Indianapolis.
Phillip this is Rivers. A big game for the Jets. This is a 4-5 game. This is a big game. I give it to the Jets because Phillip Rivers is going to be quarterback in that team. The Jets find a way to survive and win this game. I think we gave it to the Jets, too.
No, I'm giving this. I don't think I did. At Indianapolis, yeah. No. I'm giving them 0-3 to start. I don't see it. I'm a Jets fan, too, man.
Yeah,
Denver, your Cinderella story of the year.
It's a travel. It's a Sunday night, 8:20. I give it to the Jets.
I can give them that one. Yeah,
So you got them at 1-3.
Yeah, versus Arizona with D-Hop, but it's a travel.
Is it a letdown game for Arizona? This is agonizing, man.
That's why you don't bet on your team.
Yeah, this is agonizing. I'm not going to lie. I think I'm having an ulcer right now.
I don't think they beat Arizona.
I don't think they beat me at 1-4. Fine.
At the Los Angeles Chargers, this one I think they can win.
2-4.
Yeah, 2-4. Versus Buffalo at home, they were splitting that. 3-4. All right, okay.
So far, so good.
All right, okay. Moving along. Kansas City. All right, well, that's fine.
Yeah, 3-5.
Oh, sorry.
Three and five.
Versus New England,
they're splitting.
So 4-5.
4-5. At Miami, they always lose at Miami. 4-6.
4-6 bye week. Then they got Miami again. We had them splitting there.
5-6.
6. Versus Vegas in Jersey.
Travel 1:00. They beat them last year in New Jersey. I'm giving that to the Jets. I think we gave that to the Raiders.
I think that's a Jets win there. 6-6.
Is it 5-5 in there?
6-6 is 12 game. We're week 13 with a bye.
Okay, 6-6.
You might have 5-7. I don't know. Or,
okay.
At Seattle, at the Rams, those are both loss.
All right, so we got them at 6-8.
6-8 versus Cleveland.
I think we gave that to the Jets, no?
Yeah, I think we might have, but New England's winning on the
finale. Yeah. So you got them at 7-9.
7-9, and they take the over.
They take the over. Half,
over under 7-9. Hey,
I'll take it. What?
It was a close one. See, like we said, best for last. We just gave you a nice over bet to play for this season, everybody. So we could take a commission. Thank you very much.
And starting next week before Thursday's game, we're going to do our three-team parlays for the week. We'll be doing that starting next week on episode 15.
Keep an eye out for that. We will also be incorporating a new segment called Fantasy 5. 5 minutes of fantasy football advice, whether it's start, sit, waiver wire pickups, trade proposals, trade ideas. Please, send us your comments, send us a message, and we'll certainly answer some questions on the air. But while we're wrapping up the AFC right now, favorite to win the AFC, I'm pretty sure we're in agreement on that, right?
It's the Buffalo Bills.
No, the AFC.
Oh, the AFC. Oh, Kansas City, obviously.
Yeah. We're in agreement there. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, we've talked about it the whole episode.
I think it's going to, I think the Super Bowl is going to be a rematch of last year. It's going to be the San Francisco 49ers against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. It's certainly a possibility there. I really don't see many other possibilities and combinations other than maybe Seattle squeaking through. Seattle versus Kansas City, but really, who's going up against Kansas City? That's the real question. Like,
the only team I could think of is Baltimore and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
he's regular season MVP, but he's got to prove it in the playoffs, and he hasn't done it yet. So,
yeah, I guess Baltimore has a shot. So, anyway, news and notes. Okay, so let's. You want to touch on some of the playoff updates? Miami's up. Miami is up 2-0 in their series, and it was a squeaker.
And it's funny that series is going to be interesting. What happens, because if the Bucks get knocked out, I mean, there is a big chance that Giannis will not be a Milwaukee Buck next year because he goes into free agency. I think it's next year, right?
I'm not sure.
Whenever it is, and there is word that he might not stay in Milwaukee, so we'll see. But that's going to be interesting, the domino effect in these playoffs. But yeah, Miami right now looks just like a strong team, man. They just look like a brick house, man. They're tough.
They won last night because of a last second buzzer foul.
Yeah.
Butler, and he sunk the foul shots. It was a tie game.
Yeah.
So that was a crazy way to end a game. The West has been decided as far as moving on to that second round. So it's going to be Lakers Rockets tomorrow, and Nuggets Clippers are going right now. Actually.
Yeah. I like the Nuggets. I like the Clippers in that series. Lakers Rockets is going to be interesting, man. James Harden against LeBron. Can Harden carry this team past the Lakers? I picked the Lakers to win, so I think they're going to win the series probably in six. But if Harden can get on a roll here, man, and just put the pressure on the Laker defense, if the Lakers can't score, they're in trouble.
That was a great play at the end of the game last night or two nights ago.
Yeah. So we'll see, man.
He just jumped up so he couldn't. The guy was trying to hit it off his leg and out of bounds, and he jumped up perfectly. I was like, wow, that is amazing. The Raptors beat the Celtics, so Boston is now leading 2-1. They beat them by 1 point today.
Yeah. I think the Celtics are going to win that series in five.
Yeah.
They're just a better team.
I mean, that was a close one. As far as NHL, the Islanders are not closing this out, and – they are tied 4-4 and in yet another overtime with the Flyers. Islanders lead 3-2, but they do not want to have a game seven. All the momentum on the Flyers. It's never a good thing when you can have a team come back from 3-1, let alone 3-0.
Yeah, especially in hockey. Yeah. I know. Wow. Especially in hockey. That happens a lot in hockey, you know. You get a hot goalie and all of a sudden, so the Islanders got to be careful, man. They got to, you know, they're up 3-2, man.
They have to close it out. They got to close this out right here. Yeah. Scotty Wolf, if you're watching, turn off the podcast right now and stop talking to people and just watch. Anyway, all right. So that covers some of the playoff updates.
NFL?
I guess we'll stick to basketball for a second just to have that honorable mention for Steve Nash.
Yeah.
Hired as the Brooklyn Nets head coach.
Mm-hmm.
What did he sign? 4-year deal, right?
Yeah, 4-year deal. He hasn't coached before, but he's got a great relationship with Kevin Durant and Kyrie. Here's the thing. You know, the guy doesn't have experience behind the bench, but listen, neither did Steve Kerr when he took the Golden State job. That's the way I kind of look at it. As long as you got the two best players in the league there, I think he's going to be fine. The guy has experience being a point guard. I think they're going to be okay. I think Brooklyn's going to be an Eastern Conference finalist next year once Durant comes back and Kyrie's healthy. So, I have no problem with the hiring. I think it's great.
Yeah. So let's jump over to baseball, and then we can end it with some NFL news. The Yankees and the Tampa Bay Rays, as we were getting off the air on Tuesday,
killed each other the other night.
Yeah, we missed it because, you know, we were on the air and we just missed the update. But Aroldis Chapman threw the ball behind somebody's head. He did not. He says he didn't do it intentionally. I mean, I could believe him. But Aroldis Chapman got a 3-game suspension out of it. He's up in arms about that. And then Aaron Boone and Kevin Cash got 1 game each for their role in the brawls. So, I mean, you got anything to say about that one, Rick?
Yeah, I think it's right. I mean, you got to calm emotions down there. But Kevin Cash can't come out after the game and say, hey, listen, I got a bunch of guys who can throw 98 miles an hour. Like, you can't say that either. Like, I don't know, cooler heads got to prevail there. But those are two teams that don't like each other. And I think right now that the Rays are just, you know, the Rays have something over the Yankees right now, man. They can pitch. They hit well against them. I mean, and so we'll wait and see. But it's going to be interesting when these teams play again, you know, what it's going to be like. So, but yeah, these suspensions are fine. They're appealing them right now. We'll see where it plays out. But cooler heads need to prevail. Major League Baseball was right to sort of say enough is enough.
Well, in the process of Aroldis Chapman appealing his suspension, he played tonight, gave up a home run to the Mets, and let them tie the game up. And the Mets ended up coming back and winning the game 9-7 tonight.
The great Pete Alonso, huh?
Which segues to my next point. The Mets, obviously, we've touched on Steve Cohen and him being in the driver's seat as far as buying the Mets. Yep. And it was reported that his bid that got him to where he is right now was $2.35 billion. Mind you, in about February, right before COVID, he offered $2.6 billion, $250 million more to buy the Mets and SNY, but they didn't want to get rid of SNY.
Yeah.
And then they ended up having to put up the auction, and it was pretty much Jeff Wilpon. I mean, that's the story on all the, you know, airwaves, is Jeff Wilpon just really doesn't like Steve Cohen and wanted to be petty, and he's going to lose out on $250 million extra because of pretty much just trying to keep hold. And I heard something about he also asked for access to the private jets at his disposal and stuff like that. Jeff Wilpon did. I mean, it's like, come on.
Dude, like, let it go already. You lost $250 million because your ego got in the way of you. And this goes to show you never make decisions based on emotion. I mean, he should have thought things through and be like, look, the guy's going to – if you're going to buy the team, right? If I'm going to buy something, I'm going to own it. I'm going to wait 5 years to – that's like stupid. Like, I'm gonna own the team, and the
especially
guy,
especially if you're paying that much money.
Yeah, if I'm offering you $2.6 billion, dude, I'm owning the team, bro. It's mine, right?
You're not going to Walmart and getting something on layaway.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, again, this was ego. This was, you know, I mean, just you just lost $250 million because you were just being stupid. And that's what happened there. So, but look, again, you and I talked about this before. Steve Cohen is the right guy for the to own the team.
Yeah.
He's going to clean up the debt. He's going to be able to sign free agents. He's going to bring a sense of stability, a new hope for the Met fan, and just a go win it at any cost attitude, which I think the Mets need. So instead of playing second fiddle to the Yankees and we can't do this and that, Steve Cohen's going to come in and say, we're spending the money. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, Jeff Wilpon during this whole entire situation pretty much just showed the Mets fans that what they already knew. Like, they just, it's all about being cheap. It's all about, you know, keeping money. It's not about the team.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, the guy wanted to have rights to SNY still. He wanted rights to his private jet, the private team jet. Like, come on, man. All right. Just let's finish this up. Let Steve Cohen move into Corona, and let's just get on. Let's just get on with life as a post Wilpon world. Anyway, so
Jesus Christ, I mean, he's getting $2.6 billion. You can't get your own private jet. I mean, come on, dude, grow up. come on, man.
Nothing makes sense.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Oh, and one more thing. I want to just correct myself. When we were talking to Andrew, we were talking about Pat Mahomes. He didn't go to Baylor. He went to Texas Tech, so I stand
corrected. Texas Tech, yes.
He played at Texas Tech. I stand corrected. All right. Well, that's another great show, great episode.
Are we going to touch on a couple of the NFL or no? We can do a quick one.
We'll do a quick one. We'll do a lightning round.
The Seahawks are re-signing Josh Gordon.
Everybody gives this guy a chance. If he can play this is like a fifth chance.
Come on.
Yeah, if he can play half a season, then that's great.
The Titans are trying to get Jadeveon Clowney in for a physical. They can't get a hold of him. And it's not just them. There's a couple of other teams that have been trying. I think the Seahawks being one of them. So the guy's just like ghosting all the teams after he wants all this money, and he's just not showing up the physicals. So I don't know what's going on with that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers signed Leonard Fournette after the Jaguars released him. He cleared waivers. Then the Bucs signed him $3.5 million for 1 year. And Bruce Arians says, quote, Rojo is still our guy, meaning Ronald Jones. You're not paying somebody $3.5 million for 1 year to go with the guy that you already had. Let's be real.
I mean, listen, they're going to be able to, you know, they're probably going to share carries or what have you.
He's got
to
learn a little bit of the playbook, but
of course, yeah.
Can't say but look, to my guy like
let players. Me tell you, Tampa, that a guy like that, Fournette, is for if they're playing, you know, the NFC Championship in San Francisco and it's cold out there and it's 40 degrees or whatever, and you want to give him the ball, you know, late in the fourth quarter and just pound them, then you do that, you know, or if it's like a rainy day, like when the Giants played him and it was a muddy day, remember when Eli took that beating, you just hand that guy the ball, give him 25 times and let him beat up that defense. If, you know, for a guy like that's what you need him for. I mean, to punish a defense, that's what you need a guy like Leonard Fournette for. So that's what I think they're going to use him for. They're going to save him for the end of the season. Then just start battering defenses with him.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of the Mets comments here.
Mets on layaway.
Yeah, the Mets have been on layaway since 1986.
Hey, not anymore.
Thanks a lot, PJ. Anyway, okay. So on that note, we're gonna wrap this one up. You know, it was a longer show than usual. We want to thank our guest Andrew Knarr. Please go check out Recody.com. Sign up for the wait list. And as always, you know, Fan Experience episode 14 comes to an end, presented by Playing the Field Sports Fan Community.
Yep.
Please go and sign up, playthefielddating.com. Use promo code Fan Experience. We got a great show lined up, a great couple of shows lined up next week. And 7 days from today is NFL kickoff, Chiefs and Texans. So we will get you set up. We will get you with some of the parlays, as we mentioned. We'll get you some fantasy advice next week, and that will start for the next 20 weeks now. Football season is here, people.
Yeah, that's right.
Get excited, and we're gonna get rolling.
Thank you for all the viewers. Thank you for watching tonight. Everybody have a happy Labor Day, and we'll see you next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Peace.
Please stay safe. Have a good night.